This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas, powered by U Mobile.
I'm Wong Xiaoning, and this is The Breakfast Grill. It has been described as the largest kleptocracy case in history, with twists and turns that read like a work of fiction. Yesterday, the High Court in the country decided that the man at the centre of it would be punished for his crimes, upholding a 12-year sentence and a 210 million ringgit fine in lieu of another 5-year jail sentence. In the studio this morning to unpack the events that led to this is P. Gunasekaran, author of 1MDB, The Scandal That Brought Down a Government, and Goh Chia Yee, criminal lawyer. Gentlemen, thank you for being on the show. We appreciate the very short notice, as the verdict only came out rather late yesterday evening. But Guna, let me start with you. Were you surprised that Dato' Sri Najib's appeal was denied? Did you ever think that this day would come?
Yes, I thought this day would come. Given the weight of the evidence, I wasn't surprised. There was no other verdict which was possible. But I was initially surprised by the number of people who said that although Najib seems to be guilty, he won't go to jail. You know, so my question is, why not? No, so the verdict, I think, is an affirmation of the rule of law and the independence of the judiciary. You know? So it's something that we all should welcome as Malaysians.
And Chia Yee, as the lawyer in the room, was the quashing of his appeal a surprise? Help us unpack the judgment of the 5-person apex bench that was chaired by Chief Justice Tunku Maimun. Why did the defence fail to raise reasonable doubt?
So I have a confession to make. Actually, I was at the Palace of Justice yesterday. So I was in the media room, and when the judgment was being read, I think it wasn't really much of a surprise, because I think by the point where we reached the end of the judgment, it was pretty clear that they were going to uphold the conviction against Najib Razak. And I think Najib Razak felt that way as well, because right before the judgment, he gave a long, lengthy statement about, you know, his position on things and everything. But basically, what was raised by the appellant at that stage was that the issues in the appeal were very complex in nature, and it required some time to submit on them. But what the court decided was that actually it's not as complex as the appellants made it out to be. They were the appellate court. They were not there to make findings of fact. They were there mostly to make findings of law. So what they found was that the High Court judge, Justice Naslan's findings were sound, and they uphold those findings. So basically, the findings in the prima facie stage, which means before the defense was called, as well as the findings in the defense stage. So the court found that the defense put forward by Najib Razak was inconsistent and improbable, because the crux of the matter was the knowledge or the mens rea element of Najib Razak, because he did not deny in his defense that the money came to his accounts, in those two accounts. So we must bear in mind as well that for one of the offenses, namely the abuse of power, there is a presumption which applies. So this presumption must be rebutted on a balance of probability by the defense when defense is called. So it's not something that's easily discharged as well. So in that kind of finding, I suppose, you could see why the appellate court decided to uphold the decision of the High Court and the Court of Appeal as well.
So Guna, help us recall the case, the details of the SRC case. Was it really like what Chief Justice Tunku Maimun said in the judgment? In point of fact, we find that there's nothing complex in these appeals. Putting aside the personality of the appellant, this is a simple and straightforward case of abuse of power, criminal breach of trust, and money laundering.
Yeah. I think the case was quite straightforward, and it was extended over a period of 4 years for a lot of factors, not least of which was the delay tactics employed by Najib's lawyers at every turn in the case. So essentially, it was an open and shut case, really. You know, the 42 million ringgit came into Najib's account. That cannot be denied. It cannot be denied that Najib actually signed accounts from the check. You know, signed checks for the from the account, and that too cannot be denied. So his defense that he was not aware of that sum coming into it is actually extremely, extremely weak. So that was not a problem at all. But this doesn't actually does not involve 1MDB directly.
Yes.
But the government guaranteed a $4 billion loan to SRC International, which eventually became a subsidiary of Finance Minister Inc. after being a subsidiary of 1MDB first. You know? And that $4 billion apparently has sort of like disappeared. Nobody knows what it has been invested into and so on. And Najib was the one who secured the federal government guarantee for this $4 billion loan to SRC, which means the federal government will be liable in full for all claims arising from this.
Yeah, okay. Meanwhile, Najib's lead counsel, Hisham Tay, tried to file a stay of execution pending a review of the decision, but was denied. So what does it mean? Does this mean that last evening was day one of his 12-year jail term, Jai?
So what happened was that the Chief Justice said in her judgment, the final sentence was that the warrant of committal is issued. So after that, Tuan Hisham Tepotek stood up to say that he would wish to apply for a stay. But then the Chief Justice said, I've already decided that the warrant of committal was to be issued. So what happens actually is that once she has given that, pronounced the judgment, I don't think that she can go back on that immediately. So if they would like to apply for a stay, which I think it's really hard for something like a review, they would have to do a separate application later on.
So what's next for Najib Chayi? He's in Kajang prison now, but what are his options? Because I'm sure his legal team is trying their best to get the boss out of jail, right?
So, I mean, the next most obvious option I think everybody is talking about is this review. So what is a review? Basically, a review is when the court reviews its own decision. It's different from a judicial review. The court is basically mostly concerned just with the question of law and whether there is a miscarriage of justice and abuse of process. So everybody probably has like said on social media, this is a very difficult hurdle to pass, and they're right. You know, I made tried making review applications myself. It's not easy. So you really need to show that there is you really need to meet the high threshold that's set out there. So a different panel will be looking at the decision of the panel yesterday, and they will be deciding whether there's any injustice there. So I think the main points that the defense team will put forward is obviously the lack of representation on Najib Razak's part, the application to recuse being rejected, the decision on Justice Naslan's, whether they want to adduce further evidence on that. So those are the things that they will probably bring in to paint this picture of a miscarriage of justice. Because Najib Razak in his statement as well made it quite clear, you know, that he wasn't being represented and this and that. So I think that is basically where they're going to go with. But the next course of action after that will of course be the pardons board. So they will probably put in a pardon application. I think it's been highlighted by some lawyers as well that it has to be done within 14 days if he would like to still remain as a member of parliament. So if it's done within the time, then they can stay, that kind of disqualification is in. But the pardon application will basically be considered by this pardon board, which will then recommend it to the young people Tuan Agong to make a decision.
Yeah, but so what will be the the basis of giving a pardon? You know, what is the basis? You know, in terms of asking for a pardon,
it's really it's like a black box. You don't really know what's going on. But I think I read Tommy Thomas's book as well on this, where he was involved in this pardon process. So he described it basically was the Yang Dipenang Tuan Agong sit there and ask for his recommendations on whether these people should be pardoned. So there will be like a file review and they review the case. And basically the Attorney General, I think at that stage, may give their recommendations or present what the Attorney General's chambers thinks about this particular application. But so the Yang Dipenang Tuan Agong will make that decision.
But the other thing is the other cases which he's facing, you know, for instance, he faces four other charges for abusing his position to receive bribes of $2.3 billion and 21 charges of laundering the same amount. So would there be any basis of putting up a pardon when such charges are still ongoing and is the trial is already ongoing and in the middle of a trial, is it at all conceivable that a pardon for this would be considered?
For me, it's inconceivable. So for me, this decision yesterday was probably the decision. Looking at the review and the high threshold that needs to be met. And then when you look at the pardon spot, so it's not easy. But there has been precedent of a pardon being given to a politician just off the bat. So, you know, precedent matters. So in this situation, we can't really say that this isn't possible, but I think that it will look really bad politically as well in terms of the separation of powers, because obviously while the inherent powers possessed by Yang di-Pertuan Agong is recognized, but it's under the advice of certain people. So there are check and balances there. And if those lines are crossed, then I think that there will be another question of what we will do as a nation, which may be a scary thought to think.
Okay, Chia Yi, I have some technical questions actually from some of our listeners. They want to know, how long does Najib have to pay the fine? Because it's a tidy sum of 210 million ringgit.
So actually, in Justice Naslan's decision, he said that in default of not paying the fine, you will serve 5 years imprisonment. Mm. So actually, any time for the 12 years, if he doesn't pay it, then he has top up another 5 years.
Is he given like a 1 month time to pay or 1 year? I mean, what is the process? 210 million ringgit is quite a significant sum.
Because let's say, for example, if you were Najib Razak, but you were just an average Joe on the street and you really had no money to pay that 2,000 fine and your default was a few months, the court can't force you to pay it anyway. So in any event, what it would be is just another, you just serve that sentence pending the payment of the fine.
Okay, there's another question in that, assuming Dato' Sri Najib really does go to jail, he is in jail. Is it possible that he'll be released earlier? Will he serve the full 12 years?
Well, so then that comes into the question of parole. So if he's on good behavior and, you know, there's good recommendations, then he may be on parole. But the thing about being on parole is that, firstly, your offense must not be listed under the fourth schedule of the Prisons Act. So from what I can check, I don't think any of his offences are listed there. So he is eligible for parole, but he must complete whatever pending cases against him before that application can be considered. And you must also serve half of the time that you've been sentenced with. So by that point in time, you know, let's say 4 years now, I don't know what other sentences you have. So that's something that must be considered.
Would that be added on if he's found guilty of other crimes? Then would that be added on or would it be a concurrent sentence?
Because those other crimes are from a different timeline, so they may take into consideration the amount of time he has served in prison by that point. So it might start from the time that he's been committed to prison, so they may take that into consideration. Or the court may itself just find that it starts from that point in time of the decision. It really depends on the court.
On a special grill this morning, we review the outcome of Dato' Sri Najib's failed SRC appeal at the federal court with P. Gunasekaran, author of 1MDB, The Scandal That Brought Down the Government, and Goh Chia Yi, criminal lawyer. Up next, the political future of Malaysia. Does it change with this outcome of the trial? BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill. Brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Breakfast Grill. In the hot seats this morning is P. Gunasekaran, author of 1MDB, The Scandal That Brought Down a Government, and Goh Chia Yi, criminal lawyer. Now let's spend some time on Najib's other four cases linked to the 1MDB scandal. Because these cases have been going on for so long, Chia Yi, help us remind us, what else is pending and does yesterday's outcome make a difference?
Well, there's a case with Arukanda as well, the 1MDB audit report tampering. And then there's a case, the Tanori case as well. And then there are one or two other cases that are also pending. But in terms of whether the decision would have an impact on those cases, I think realistically speaking, I think everybody knows about the decision yesterday and they know about the approach that Chief Justice has taken, a very strong approach. And within the next few years, of course, you say the Chief Justice will still be in power. So maybe that would have some kind of indirect influence on how the judges may approach their cases going forward. But of course, this is just speculation on my end. I think the judge's job is still to remain impartial. In terms of whether that particular conviction can be brought in as evidence of him having a tendency to commit the offence he's being tried for in those other cases, I think the law in Malaysia for bad character evidence is strongly in favour of the accused. Unlike in the UK, where there may be certain instances listed out in legislation for this bad character evidence to be brought in or similar fact evidence to be brought in. In Malaysia, I would think it's pretty harsh for such evidence to be brought in just for the purposes of the other trials. So that is just my two cents on the issue.
Meanwhile, Guna, is this truly the end of Najib's political career? I mean, was he really the cat with nine lives and he's got like eight more, seven more to go? I mean, what do you think?
I think prison will really mean the end of his political career. You know, I mean, the case that comes to mind is Harun Idris in the 1970s when he went to jail for corruption offences.
Mm.
So even after he came out, it was impossible for him to get back into the political field. Here you're talking about much larger amounts of money, and the 42 million case in SRC is actually relatively small compared to what he's going to be accused of and what he could possibly be responsible for in terms of overall losses in at one MDB, which run into the tens of billions of ringgit. So I think he's pretty much finished as a politician.
Okay. Chia Yee, maybe a little bit unfair, but before this, many quarters of Malaysians actually never really believed that a former Prime Minister of Malaysia would actually serve jail time. So is this, from your perspective, really a resounding affirmation that the Malaysian legal system, be it its warts and all, works from the prosecutors to the judge at the High Court and then finally at the Federal Court?
I think it just shows that it works sometimes. I mean, from my experience, sometimes it doesn't. I don't think we can have an illusion here that it works all the time, having seen the decision yesterday. Maybe perhaps because the public eye was on the decision yesterday, that's why it works. But sometimes when nobody is watching, whether it works or not is a question that we really have to consider. Just to add on from our previous question, whether the conviction would affect anything else, I forgot to add on that the conviction will factor into his sentencing for the other cases because he won't be a first-time offender anymore. So maybe that will increase the whatever sentence he might be potentially facing if he is convicted. But in terms of like the legitimacy of the system as well, I think when in 2020, what happened with the change of government, once again, I think that kind of shattered our faith in our democracy a bit. 2018 restored it, but seeing now that that their votes did matter in some sense because of those votes, we managed to get a panel of judges, which we would think is one of the strongest that we have in history. And this panel of judges has resulted in a conviction of a person which many feel really has committed the offence which he has been charged with. So I think definitely the faith in judiciary has been restored yesterday. And I think we need to continue this. And hopefully, because the system only works with us believing in it. Laws only work because we believe it governs us. And the moment we stop believing in it, that's when everything crumbles. So I think it's a good thing for the decision yesterday. It really affirmed what the public felt. And I think that this should be kept going forward.
Yeah, if I may add, I think if you look at a case, it has many elements to it. The first part of it is investigation. And then after that is the prosecution by the Attorney General itself. So, and then finally, when it is brought up to the courts, then you have a decision on whether the person is guilty or not. So it several processes have got to be done for this to come up to the public. So it is important that we also have independence of investigation and independence of prosecution. If not, the justice system will still fail even if you have a truly fair and independent judiciary. See? There are three parts of the system which have to be independent at the same time. And that's what we should be working towards.
Yeah. But at the same time, Guna, what's the main message here? I mean, when we think about it, do we have a political system, an executive branch that actually allowed corruption of this level to happen? I mean, how do we get to this point in history?
I think basically it was simply a lack of checks and balances. You have a system where the MACC chief is appointed basically by the PM and can be removed at the discretion of the PM, as Najib famously did with the last. And the same applies to the Attorney General. And the Attorney General has got sole discretion to prosecute or not to prosecute under the Constitution. And so it is vital that the Attorney General be independent. Otherwise, the process of bringing people to the courts will be scuttled. So those are the things that we have to consider in the effort to make changes now. So at the end of it, you know, how do you change all of this? Basically, it's changing the government. You know. So be careful who you vote for, I suppose, is the lesson. You know, if you know that somebody is corrupt, don't vote for the person. So vote in the people who can make the changes which are necessary to make the country progress, you know, including eliminating corruption.
So, Chai, one quick question then. What are some of the structural changes you would like to be made, actually, so that Malaysia as a country, we can progress as a democracy?
I think just now, a point that was highlighted by Guna as well is the role of the Attorney General. I think it's really important. So perhaps we should separate that role from the public prosecutor. So we have separate roles. So the public prosecutors focus simply on the prosecution of things, while the Attorney General can advise the government on other matters as well. So I think this is an important structural change going forward. And some things that Guna has mentioned as well, like the appointment of, let's say, the MACC chief, the appointment of the Attorney General, these things have to be considered and looked at as well. Like, do we want to give so much power to someone to appoint this hit for very necessary institutions in our country? So that is just some of the ideas that I think we need to move.
Just one point on the independence. I think just separating the public prosecutor from the AG is not enough. The public prosecutor also has got to be independent. So that's something which needs to be emphasized.
Okay, Guna, more political question though. Do you think this SRC judgment will change the outcome of GE15?
That's a pretty difficult question to answer, but definitely a lot of people are going to be swung away from UMNO and the current coalition as a result of these decisions, especially when you have people like the UMNO president and the UMNO deputy president and the secretary general, all of them in some way or other expressing support for Najib, despite the fact that the courts have already found him guilty. I think I can't see how the public can fail to be upset by something like this by the current leadership of UMNO.
And do you think it changes the timeline in which the elections will take place, though? Will it be sooner or later now?
I think the timeline is for PM Ismail Sabri to decide. And when I look at it, I don't see any reason why he would want to hold the elections earlier. It doesn't serve his purpose, you know, because the longer that the election is delayed, the longer he'll be prime minister. You know? So he could delay the elections potentially until about September next year. So I think there's no reason for him to call early elections.
But is it still going to be Barisan's election to lose, though? At the end of the day, that's what the polls have been telling us so far.
I think this has changed it somewhat. And the thing is, I mean, it depends on how well the opposition organizes itself and finds a team to fight the election. So there are a lot of imponderables. To my mind, I think the election could still go either way. But the most likely outcome could be, according to common wisdom, there will be a hung parliament and some kind of coalitions would have to be formed.
On that note, thank you, gentlemen, for your time. On The Breakfast Grill this morning was P. Gunasekaran, author of 1MDB, The Scandal That Brought Down the Government, and Goh Chia Yee, criminal lawyer. I'm Wong Shaoning, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, where unlimited potential begins.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.